Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, March 25th, 2019. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David, and good evening, everybody. Tonight we have another fast hour of information and news of interest to veterans. It will be a fascinating show, so stay tuned. I'd like to acknowledge two of our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli. Their financial contribution helps us provide this weekly show for the benefit of veterans and their families across the country. I also wish to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us anytime during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call number is 1-888-627-6008. And like I always comment about the fact that this is a call-in show. I can't stress the importance of the fact that this is a call-in show because, you know, you veterans and family members of veterans, you're a very important part of the whole issue regarding veterans. And, you know, it's very important that, you know, we hear your viewpoint. And David and I, each week, we try to provide some interesting information to you know, our listeners, and some news from DC and what's going on with the VA. But you know, you veterans, just like when you serve, you know, you're on the ground, you know what's going on. You go into these VA hospitals, you go to these comp and pen exams, you see what's happening. You Camp Lejeune veterans, you know what's going on out there. I see you all on Facebook all the time, so you know, if you're listening tonight, pick up the phone and call us. You know, that number again is 1-888-627-6008. You know, a conversation with one or more of you veterans, would be, you know, worth, a lot to a lot of people. So, that's my spiel about the fact this is a call-in show. So don't just let David and I talk for the next 60 minutes. Pick up the phone and call us. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Rick. I think that's a great reminder. I do hope we get some callers tonight. Rick, I understand that over the weekend you participated in the annual 82nd Airborne Charity Golf Tournament to benefit local veteran groups, and that was in Citrus Hills, Florida. How'd that go?
Oh, it was great, David. You know, they had about 100 golfers out there. Most of the participants were members of the 82nd Airborne, you know, and for me, you know, I didn't serve. I have family members who served, but, you know, it's just fun to be out there and to listen to these veterans and their stories and, the camaraderie that they have amongst themselves is, just wonderful. There were some young veterans out there. There were some older veterans and, you know, golf was kind of the sideshow. We all did our best out there. There was a beautiful sunny day in Florida. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the 82nd Airborne, you know, this branch of the service started, August 5th of, 1917, and it's based out of Fort Bragg. It's considered the U.S. Army's most strategically mobile division. Some say it's the best trained light division in the world. And they are currently active today in Iraq, and they're assisting the Iraqi security forces. So, you know, these men, their stories are wild. I mean, you know, to hear them talk about, their service to the country and what they put themselves through, is truly amazing. You know, Dave, I'm sure you're very familiar with the 82nd as well.
Oh yeah, one of our clients, who's now deceased, Les Colgrove, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel. He served in the 82nd. He had several combat tours in Vietnam, and he invited me a few years ago before he passed away to be a guest speaker at a winter convention that they had at the 82nd Airborne reunion in Tampa. And that was a great event, really well attended, a lot of veterans from multiple generations. So it's very much a historic unit that's played a big role in the wars in the last century. So how'd it go, do you think, Rick, as far as a fundraiser for the groups, and what local groups do you know was it benefiting?
Well, they basically try to help veterans organizations, veterans groups that are trying to help the homeless, food banks, you know, so they do pretty well because, in addition to the different members, you know, paying their green fees and stuff like that. So they, you know, they get money that way, but there's a lot of sponsors, you know, Corey and Early Law Group, we were sponsoring as well. And, you know, I spoke to the fellow Steve, who's also one of our clients, and I asked him how he did, and they were very happy, especially with the turnout. I think last year they had, I think he said 57 golfers, and this year they were over 100.
Wow.
So, you know, he was very happy about it. It's growing. You know, it helps, you know, to be in Florida in March when the weather, you know, you wake up and it's about, you know, 52, 55 when you're teeing off, and by the time you come around to the 18th hole, it's about, you know, 75. So you can't ask for any better weather, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. So, it, you know, and I was, you know, paired up with a couple of veterans from the 82nd, and I just kind of sat back and listened to their stories and kept trying to pull more stuff out of them, because I just kept wanting to hear more and more of their stories, because, you know, they're very humble about their service. And, you know, you see them today, and, you know, a lot of them are aging, and you know, there were a lot of Korean War veterans there, and some Vietnam veterans, and you know, they are aging, and you know, but when you think, you know, how they start telling these stories about, you know, their particular service, you're like, wow, I can only imagine. So look forward to playing it again next year, and give the support to the group. It's a great group.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I know up in Citrus County, in that north central part of Florida, there's relatively large veteran population. And I know you know that better than I do. You interact with a lot of them, and whether it's from more of the central part around Ocala over to the west coast, and all the way down to the Tampa Bay area.
They say there's about 600,000 veterans within 75 miles of downtown Ocala.
Wow.
And that it's one of the most densely populated areas of the country full of veterans. And, you know, Ocala is kind of unique because it, you know, there's, you know, it's becoming a big city. I mean, Ocala is actually, huge in terms of land mass and the number of people that live there. Big senior citizen communities and, around the area. But it also, like I said, it also has a lot of land. So a lot of veterans, you know, like to be able to retire in the Ocala area and, you know, have an acre or two and kind of be able to breathe and not be stuck in a city or a town. They want to be able to kind of flex their muscles a little bit. And, so Ocala tends to offer both. You know, you've got a little bit of a city life. You got, you know, junior college there. Gainesville isn't far away. Tampa's not far away. But then you can also live free, which is what so many of these veterans really, really want. I think it's part of their PTS therapy is to kind of have some space away from, you know, crowded areas. You know, that whole issue with PTS, which we discuss all the time, and its relevance to, you know, crowded places and the effect that it has. And I had a veteran in today, and we were preparing some paperwork, and I had to, you know, sit there and go through some of his symptoms about, you know, PTSD. And right, first thing he said was, I can't take people. I don't want to be around people. And I moved, and he said, he moved to the Ocala area so he could get 3-4 acres of land. And he doesn't have to be around people because people make him nervous. And it goes all the way back to when he was serving in the military and what he went through there. He was a combat veteran. And he said, you know all about them. And, So the Ocala area offers a very unique living, arrangement for veterans. And, you know, veterans who live in other parts of the country, you know, Florida is a very friendly state to veterans, especially as you get, compensated and you after you over 50% and even up, and when you get up to 100%, all the benefits that flow from, as a result of, acknowledging that you're now, you know, disabled. And that's another reason why you get so many veterans coming into Florida.
Yeah. One thing I'd add, maybe for those that aren't familiar with the Ocala area, is that part of Florida is well known for, being horse country and, some very, expensive, horse breeding is done there. And I know back when I was in law school, I went to the University of Florida in Gainesville. And one summer, I worked as a research clerk for one of the trial judges in Ocala, which is just down the road. And one of the cases that I worked on doing research for the judge involved the sale of some horses. And this is back in the early 80s that were hundreds of thousands of dollars. It just amazed me. But going to your point about the veteran that said he didn't want to be around people. And, we've heard people talk before about, pet therapy, having animals and, whether it's dogs. But also I read an article just as last week about, how veterans getting out and riding horses, how that is a form of therapy. And I know, one of the groups that we've worked with up in Ocala, they have part of that as their program, don't they? With the horses and some of the ranches out in the Ocala area, Rick.
As a matter of fact, there's a development called Golden Ocala, and the owner of Golden Ocala, which is a wonderful, kind of an expensive place to live. A lot of horse people live there, and they've got a beautiful golf course there as well. But he owns Swift Trucks. In fact, he's got a house, a beautiful home, that overlooks 75 as you're coming in near Ocala. And the joke is that he built his home there so that he can watch his trucks go up and down 75. in any event, he just recently built an equestrian center, and it's the state of the art. It's the number one equestrian center in the world. Prior to him deciding to keep it in Ocala, he had offers from Kentucky, he had offers from Saudi Arabia, and other places around the world to put this center. And it is like the spa, a 5-star spa for thoroughbreds.
Wow.
And they've got showers for these thoroughbreds. They've got, around the clock care for these thoroughbreds. I mean, it is unbelievable, what he has there. And, I know he has brought in, I've spoken to him a few times, and he's brought in veterans, to just work, and they volunteer and just be a part, be around the whole, horse environment for that reason, just what you said.
Yeah,
and they enjoy, washing them and brushing them and, that kind of stuff. So.
And riding them probably too, some of them. Maybe not the $1 million racehorses, but some of the other ones. Yeah. And the beautiful thing about Ocala is kind of rolling hills. It's different terrain than you have down even in the Tampa Bay area. And, although, like you said, Ocala is growing, it does not have a big city feel to it. There aren't big skyscrapers. It's kind of more like a large town atmosphere too. I know surrounding it, you have the villages and some other retirement communities, and the population has really taken off, as you mentioned. But
yeah, the area from, you know, going from the Gulf across the state up in Ocala, Citrus Hills, where I'm located, it's kind of right on the cusp of North Florida versus South Florida. So while we have, you know, our share of palm trees, we also have our share of live oaks, and other vegetation that's more akin to North Florida, South Georgia. So it's very unique. And for that reason, a lot of people, like to, you know, especially from the north, they like to come and settle in this area because it kind of, kind of resembles what they were living in up north. But I guess I shouldn't keep going on because we're going to get overcrowded here in Ocala and Central Florida. Everyone's going to start moving down here.
Well, as long as they can keep enough land for the horses and the golf courses, I think people will be happy out there, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, David, you got some news for us?
Yeah, I do. You know, here at the Veterans News Hour, our loyal listeners know that we like to follow what's going on with veteran issues at the state and local level, as well as the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. Over the last couple of years, we've had folks from private and state government veteran organizations, and they've talked about the different programs and services they have for veterans. In the past, I've extended an invitation a couple times to one particular group. They've always been too busy, but I'm on their newsletter, and that's the organization called New York City Veterans Alliance. So I wanted to really, on their behalf, I wanted to report some of the news for those veterans that may be in New York or the New York area, to know that there are some veteran groups working on their on your behalf, and what some of the issues that they see going on in New York and New York City area. The New York City Veterans Alliance has been around for just a few years, but they're already making an impact. And this past week, in some of their news releases, they've expressed some views, their criticisms of unhappiness with what they see are cuts in the New York City budget for veteran services, as well as the state, New York State budget cuts for veteran programs. So both at the city and the state level, veteran programs or budgets are being cut. Mayor de Blasio of New York City has proposed cutting the New York City Department of Veteran Services by $63,000. It's only 3 years into the beginning of this agency. And the New York Veterans Alliance, their view is that, yeah, $63,000 is a fair amount of money, but it's really a very small amount compared to New York City's broader $92 billion budget. And the Alliance's view is that the veterans in New York City have historically been underserved by the New York City government, and they have problems with homelessness and other things that need to be addressed. And as we all know, the federal VA does not have the resources, although it has a large budget, doesn't have the resources for all the needs that are out there. And that's why state, local, and private veteran groups all play a role. The Veterans Alliance also is critical of New York State budget cuts of veteran programs. Governor Cuomo has proposed cutting more than $2 million in funding for a veteran peer-to-peer program. It's named after Joseph P. Dwyer. It's called the Joseph P. Dwyer Veteran Services Peer-to-Peer Program that has been highly successful across New York in working with veterans with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury, which are helping to reduce critical risk factors for veteran suicides, PTSD and TBI. Governor Cuomo is also cutting $1.6 million from the state budget to assist veterans and their families with accessing the services and the benefits they need. And the view of the New York City Veterans Alliance, which is a private group, is that it's really unconscionable to be cutting those services. New Yorkers are still coming home from wars and conflicts across the globe. Some of them have been deployed multiple times over the last 17 years. New York City Veteran Alliance also reported that the problem of veteran homelessness in New York City actually went up, not down last year. And while the city's made a lot of progress in the past to try to reduce homelessness, a lot of work still needs to be done, and cutting the budgets in the city and the state certainly aren't helping. Another issue of concern is that of veteran suicides that still remains at a very high level, both nationally and in, like most states, in New York as well. And it's one that really needs more funding. President Trump recently signed into law a Veteran Suicide Task Force, but it currently has no funds allocated yet, and its organization remains unclear. And that's why New York City Veterans Alliance is looking for help at all levels of government, both state and city. So those are some of the things that New York City Veterans Alliance is working on in New York City and New York State area. If we have time, I'll return to New York News a little later in the program, because their organization, I think, illustrates very well the impact on people, the positive impact that private organization can have to help veterans and their families. So, Rick, I understand you have some news about the VA advancement on the treatment of hepatitis C.
Yeah, I sure do. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs announced on March the 18th that it is on track to eliminate the hepatitis C virus, HCV, in as few as 2 months, and all veterans willing and able to be treated. As of March 3rd, nearly 116,000 veterans started oral hepatitis C medications in VA, of which 96,654 veterans completed treatment and have been cured. As the largest single provider of HCV care in the U.S., this is terrific news because it means we are within striking range of eliminating hepatitis C among veterans under the care of the Veterans Health Administration, according to Secretary Robert Wilkie. Diagnosing, treating, and curing hepatitis C virus infection among veterans has been a significant priority for the VA. HCV infection can lead to advanced liver disease, liver cancer, death. Treatment of HCV can prevent development of progression of ALD, greatly improving survival. However, before 2014, HCV treatment required weekly interferon injections for up to a year with low cure rates, approximately 35-55% among veterans, and significant physical and psychiatric side effects leading to frequent early discontinuation. Up to that time, of the approximately 180,000 veterans in VA care who had been diagnosed with chronic HCV infection, only 12,000 had been treated and cured, while over 30,000 had developed ALD. In early 2014, highly effective, less toxic, all-oral direct-acting antivirals became available, revolutionizing the treatment of HCV. With the support of Congress and other stakeholders, the VA implemented an aggressive program to find all undiagnosed veterans in VA care with HCV, including those who did not know they carried the infection, link them to HCV care, and offer them treatment with these new medications. At the peak of this effort to rapidly deploy all oral direct acting antivirals, VA began treating close to 2,000 veterans with HCV every week. Nearly one treatment started every minute of every workday. As a result of this historic effort, the overall death rate 1 year after treatment reduced to 80% among veterans in VA care with HCV. Veterans cured of HCV with these medications were also 84% less likely to develop liver cancer. The announcement cements VA's position as a national leader in diagnosis and treatment of HCV and marks a major milestone in the nation's fight against viral hepatitis. VA is on track to treat more than 125,000 veterans with these life-saving medications by October. Currently, fewer than 27,000 veterans in VA care remain to be treated. All marketed hepatitis C medications are on the VA national formulary. Hepatitis C medications used today have few side effects and can be administered as a once-a-day treatment for as little as 8 weeks. For more information, visit www.hepatitis.va.gov. That's www.hepatitis.va.gov/. That's great news. David.
Oh, it sure is, because we've represented a number of veterans that had hepatitis C. Several that come to my mind right now, their hepatitis C developed into more advanced liver disease and then cancer, and they passed away. But I also know some veterans who've been successfully treated. And this is a relatively new development, basically in the last 5 years or so. And it's great news. So hopefully the word will get out. We're trying to do our part tonight in helping to spread the word that the VA has now some very successful treatment programs for hepatitis C. And if you're a veteran that has it or you know someone that does, get into the VA. We've got other medical news, though. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs announced last Tuesday that healthcare providers will now be able to offer the newly approved Spravato nasal spray for treatment-resistant depression. The treatment will be made available to veterans based on their individual medical needs combined with providers' clinical assessments. The move follows the March 5th Food and Drug Administration approval of Spravato, which is esketamine, a nasal spray. The drug was approved for use in conjunction with an oral antidepressant for the treatment of treatment-resistant depression in adults. VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said, and I quote, "We're pleased to be able to expand options for veterans with depression who have not responded to other treatments. It reflects our commitment to seek new ways to provide the best health care available for our nation's veterans," unquote. Spravato will be available through a restricted distribution system under the FDA-approved Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy, or REMS. The purpose of the REMS is to mitigate the risks of serious adverse outcomes and potential abuse and misuse of the drug. VA healthcare providers will monitor veterans for serious adverse outcomes such as sedation and difficulty with attention, judgment, and thinking, abuse and misuse, worsening of depression, and suicidal thoughts and behaviors. Veterans will self-administer Spravato nasal spray under the direct observation of a healthcare provider in a certified medical facility, and then must be monitored by a healthcare provider for at least 2 hours after receiving their dose. Spravato cannot be dispensed directly to veterans for use at home. For additional information on access to mental health support for veterans, a lot of resources at the VA. They've got a website. They've got the crisis line. The website for veteran mental health support is pretty easy to remember. It's mentalhealth.va.gov. That's mentalhealth.va.gov. Veterans in immediate crisis can call the crisis line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. We announce this number every week on our show at the end. That's 1-800-273-8255. Press 1. That's the Veteran Crisis Line. They even have a text. You can send a text message to 838-255. That's 838-255. And you can chat online at the Veterans Crisis Line at a website, veteranscrisisline.net/get-help/chat. That's amazing. So there's a lot of ways to reach out for help, both online and through the telephone. So it's always interesting to see the VA is continually trying to improve its services for veterans as far as mental health care. And this is just another example of that, where they're making progress with new medications, in this case, the nasal spray, and as well as continuing to provide counseling and other treatments. So, all right, back to you, Rick.
Thanks, David. Some more important news. VA Secretary Robert Wilkie announced that effective in April, it will provide priority disability benefits claims processing for the initial claims from discharged combat veterans who have been awarded the Purple Heart Medal. Secretary Wilkie announced his decision at a hearing before the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Military Construction, Veterans Affairs, and Related Agencies. He said that those who hold the Purple Heart, the recognition of wounds taken in battle, will now receive priority consideration when it comes to claims before the Department of Veteran Affairs. The Veterans Benefit Administration will amend its priority processing categories to include initial claims received from the Purple Heart recipient on or after April 1st, 2019. Purple Heart recipients are already treated on a priority basis at VA hospitals are exempt from co-payments for the medical care. Purple Heart Award is the oldest military decoration and is awarded to U.S. service members for wounds suffered at the hands of the enemy. General George Washington awarded the first purple-colored heart-shaped badges to soldiers who fought in the Continental Army during the American Revolution. In 1932, it was revived to commemorate Washington's 200th birthday. David, maybe you can just, you know, this is a very important new policy from the VA. And I get calls from some veterans who say that they served, they got wounded, they were entitled to the Purple Heart, and for whatever reason, they didn't pursue it. And here they are years, you know, decades later, and now they're being urged to go back and try, you know, to get the Purple Heart. Maybe you can comment on, because I think you've had some experience in this area.
Well, what can you... there's a process, to do that. The Board for Correction of Military Records, and for the Navy and the Marine Corps is the Board for Correction of Naval Records. They can essentially correct, a record, to, acknowledge, that, award or decoration was actually, earned and deserved. The difficulty is when you're talking about decades later, it's very difficult to compile the evidence that's enough to convince these boards. And that's because, well, first of all, for obvious reasons, people that might have been eyewitnesses, they may have passed on. Might be difficult to locate them if they're still alive. In some cases, it may be next to impossible for veterans to even identify others that were present at the time. And those are just some of the reasons. Plus the fact that these boards operate from a presumption that the burden of proof is really on the veteran. And that's just the way the rules are set up. So. It's very tough, just as a practical matter. I won't say it's impossible, but it can be very, very difficult. You occasionally will hear stories where some congressional office, some representative or some senator has announced that he or she was instrumental in helping a veteran receive a Purple Heart or a Bronze Star, Silver Star, for their service, but what they're not telling you are probably the far greater percentage of such cases where they've not been successful, again, just simply because of lack of evidence. So really the lesson is for veterans, if they think that they should have been awarded a medal, some other decoration, they really need to pay attention when they're being separated from service. And the starting point is the DD-214 form, which is a summary of a veteran's service, has a section where the service will list awards and decorations. And that's a starting point. Make sure that's correct. And a veteran will get a copy of that upon separation. So that's the time to pay attention. It's not something that should be a surprise to veterans that they first learn of years later. They'll know by the time of their separations, the awards and decorations that the military has acknowledged that they've received. So really, that's the time to start fighting it, not 40 or 50 years later, where it can become next to impossible. But in any event, on a more positive note, those that are acknowledged Purple Heart recipients, as Richard mentioned, you know, the VA is taking the position now that the VA will provide priority disability benefit claim processing for initial claims for combat veterans who've been awarded the Purple Heart Medal. So it's something that veterans need to make sure that they've highlighted in their application to make sure that the VA recognizes that, and then we'll give priority processing. Okay, we got other news tonight. In our next segment, I want to focus on some positive news. You know, we have so much criticism of the VA. Sometimes it's well-deserved, no doubt, but it's always nice to see the VA doing good things and getting some kudos for that. In that vein, I note that recently an engineering construction industry magazine recognized the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs Medical Center with a, quote, best of the best healthcare, unquote, honor at the publication's 54th annual Award of Excellence Black Tie Gala held last week, March 21st in New York City. Industry judges and editors from Engineering News and Record Magazine compared projects completed between May of 2017, May of 2018, and selected the Southeast Louisiana Veterans Healthcare System, New Orleans Replacement Medical Center, which is a new 8-story, 1.6 million square foot hospital that replaced an aging VA facility which was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina. VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said, and I quote, "This award reflects our commitment to creating world-class healthcare facilities for veterans and their families. The New Orleans Replacement Medical Center is helping us to fulfill our promise of creating more access to care and services for our nation's veterans," unquote. The construction of the replacement facility was a collaboration between the VA's Office of Acquisition, Logistics, and Construction and the Veterans Health Administration, resulting in a contract with Clark McCarthy Healthcare Partners and designer Studio Nova, basically a joint venture. The New Orleans VA Replacement Medical Center serves more than 70,000 veterans in a 23 parish, which means county for the rest of us non-Louisiana or residents. It's a 23 parish catchment area and across the Gulf Coast with an anticipated 550,000 annual visits. Actually, 70,000 veterans, a pretty small population compared to what we see in Florida, Richard. In any event, it's the first major health care center in New Orleans built in the past decade that's dedicated to veterans. The medical center was also hailed as the 2018 Project of the Year by the Project Management Institute for Activation of the Hospital. According to Engineering News and Record Magazine's website, the publication provides engineering construction news, analysis, commentary, and data for construction industry professionals. In other news of interest to veterans, want to remind our listeners, registration is still underway for the 2019 National Veterans Wheelchair Games, and registration will continue through Tax Day, April 15th. The event will be held July the 11th through the 16th in Louisville, Kentucky. If you're interested in registering for the 2019 National Veterans Wheelchair Games, you can do so online through April 15th. The website is wheelchairgames.org. That's wheelchairgames.org. It's an event that's presented by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and the veteran group Paralyzed Veterans of America, PVA. It's the world's largest sporting event for veterans who use wheelchairs. And as I said, this year it will be held July the 11th through the 16th at the VA Medical Center in Louisville, Kentucky. It has sports and rehab competitions for veterans who use wheelchairs due to spinal cord injuries, amputations, or other neurological conditions. There are more than 19 different competitive events, including basketball, bowling, field events, hand cycling, power soccer, quad rugby. The list goes on and on. And athletes will compete against others with similar athletic ability, competitive experience, or age. Again, more information can be found at www.wheelchairgames.org. Over to you, Richard.
In related news, the National Disabled Veterans Winter Sports Clinic will take place next week from Sunday, March 31st to Friday, April 5th, 2019 in Snowmass, Colorado. Clinic's website is wintersportsclinic.org. Again, that's wintersportsclinic.org, all one word. The annual clinic hosted by the Department of Veterans Affairs and the DAV serves as a world leader in adaptive winter sports instruction for injured veterans and promotes sports therapy and rehabilitation through adaptive alpine and Nordic skiing, rock climbing, sled sled hockey, scuba diving, and other adaptive sports and activities. For many of the hundreds of veterans who participate in the clinic, the adaptive sports journey is just beginning. For others, it becomes a way of life in Snowmass and is a passion they take back home. The hope is veterans will build upon this experience and continue to lead active, healthy lives. Nearly 390 veterans participated in the event in 2018. For those of us who were seriously injured in military service and have spent years being told our abilities are now limited, there is nothing more empowering than coming to this clinic and being able to prove how much we really can do. The DAV National Commander Dennis Nixon, a Vietnam veteran and amputee, the dose of confidence and self-reliance that can and does truly change lives. Hundreds of volunteers, strategic corporate partnerships, nonprofit organizations, and individual donors make this life-changing clinic possible. Again, the clinic's website is winnersportsclinic.org. You can learn more about it and find out how you can participate or support it through donations. Again, that website is winnersportsclinic.org. Now, David, why don't you give us some more information about the New York Veterans Group?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. As I say, the organization in the New York City area is called New York City Veterans Alliance. Their website is nycveteransalliance.org. And it's an organization that is looking out for veterans and their families in the New York area, but they also serve as a go-to place for information about what's going on, events of interest to veterans and their families. So I've got a few things to mention about what's going on in New York City and the surrounding area. Just in the next week alone, tomorrow, March 26th, the Department of Finance offers a property tax information enrollment event in the Bronx from noon to 2 p.m., and that's important to veterans, unremarried surviving spouses, and Gold Star parents who may qualify to reduce their property taxes or actually have their rent frozen, which with the high cost of New York living and high property taxes in New York is a really big deal. So the Department of Finance has this information enrollment event, March 26th, 12 to 2 p.m., and you get more information on the website for the New York City Veteran Alliance, which is nycveteransalliance.org. And other events, a group called Empire Events holds a town hall at Queens College tomorrow, March 26th, from 3:30 to 6 p.m. They want to hear from you, New York's veterans and family members, about what works and doesn't regarding transition from active duty to civilian life and employment challenges. Another event those in New York City area might be interested is a project that's trying to chronicle literature, film, and art of the American Forever Wars. That's tomorrow at 7 p.m., presented by the New York University Cultures of War in the Post-War with retired Army veteran Peter Mullen of Rutgers University. And then on March 27th, the New York State Division of Veterans Affairs presents a training session for veteran service providers on veteran benefits. That's March 27th from 10 to 11:30 a.m. at Kew Gardens. For those of you that might be in the New York area, veterans that might be interested in learning how to knit, perhaps that's be a wonderful hobby or just a good diversion from the stress of life to learn to knit. And they do have lessons for that. That's March 27th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. This will be a beginner knitting class for veterans. All supplies will be provided. For more information, go to nycveteransalliance.org. These are just a few of many events that are coming up just in the next week. Others include the Rubin Museum of Art has an upcoming program on March 27th from 7 to 9 p.m. as part of Blue Star Family's The Brainwave series called Finding Resilience and Making Change in the Military. On March 28th, 11:30 a.m., the U.S. Army Garrison Fort Hamilton hosts its annual Vietnam Veterans Day ceremony. That's March 28th, 11:30. There is an event also on March 28th from 1 to 4:30 in White Plains, New York. There's a seminar that's free for non-attorney veterans on representing veterans before the VA for claims and related issues. It's a training session. The New Jersey, crossing the other state line, the New Jersey Military Family Nights Program, Partners in Prevention hosts the Military Family Nights Program beginning March 28th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Bring your family in and attend free, especially for kids 6 to 11 years of age. Another event coming up is the New York City Bunker Brews and Launch Party. WeWorks and Bunker Labs are excited to launch the WeWork Veterans in Residence Program, which offers U.S. military veterans and spouses fully sponsored workspaces to help entrepreneurs build and grow their businesses. To celebrate, Bunker Labs New York City is hosting a launch party March 28th, 6 to 9 p.m., with special guests introduced members of the latest Veterans in Residence tribe who will briefly share their entrepreneurial stories. So there's so many interesting and exciting events out there. And again, more information can be found at the website for New York City Veterans Alliance.
You know, David, I'm just sitting here listening to everything you're talking about in New York and then the neighboring state of Jersey. And, you know, I'm sure veterans, you know, if you live in other parts of the country, if you just Google, do a little bit of research, you'll find that your state will probably have a lot of similar programs, that you probably find helpful, enjoyable for you and or your family. So, you know, just, these cell phones are so great. Especially, you know, as a research mechanism, just to go ahead and Google your state and VA and play around with a little bit, and I guarantee you'll come up with some pretty neat stuff for the state that you live in. Hey, David, you know, one of our pet projects here, is our documentary, and I know we're getting closer to that first actual film that we're going to be able to sit down and edit. So why don't you tell us a little bit about where we stand in that project?
Yeah, one of Richard Hurley and my projects is an ongoing educational program to inform people as well as government officials about the full spectrum of the costs of war on every level of society. And part of that project is to produce a series of films on the human, societal, and financial costs of the post-9/11 wars. The films will also take things to the next step, which is to enlighten people about effective conflict prevention resolution that avoids war. It really makes war the last choice, not the first choice. So we're producing a series of films which we strive to ensure will be comprehensive, objective, nonpartisan, and scholarly. They'll be offered free to the public as a public service. And we're making good progress. This past Friday, we had a meeting with our film director and editor in Tampa. So our first film should be finished in about 2 months. And we've got more filming to do. We've got some filming set for April 10th. But we also have other plans to interview more experts. We did interviewing last October of a number of experts that will be making appearances in this first film, and certainly much more in some of the subsequent films. We have a lot of footage which can form the basis of already of a series of films talking about the costs of war as well as conflict prevention. And our first few films will be highlighting three things I want to touch on real quick before we run out of time tonight. One is the outstanding resources from the Costs of War Project's sponsored by Brown University. It's a project which is involving about 36 scholars and researchers. Their website is costsofwar.org. We had Professor Nita Crawford and Professor Catherine Lutz as guests on our show back in late 2017, and we interviewed both of those professors as well as a couple other members of the project this past October, and got a lot of great footage that we're going to incorporate in our films. The second thing we're going to emphasize is the United States Institute of Peace, which Richard and I have discovered in our work. Most Americans have never heard of it. The United States Institute of Peace is a congressionally created organization which is supposed to be both a think tank but also an action agency, but it's very small, only has about 300 people. It's not cabinet level. It is nonpartisan, though, and it's funded by Congress, relatively meager budget of about $38 million a year. $38 million is a lot of money to most people, but when you're talking about an organization which is supposed to have a national, international impact, and you compare that to a $700 billion Defense Department budget, it's pretty meager. So we're going to emphasize the work of that. Go to its website, which is usip.org. And then the third project that we want to emphasize in our films is a book called A Mighty Case Against War by Kathy Beckwith of Oregon, and it's a great book. Free copies are available. Send me an email at lawcorey1@verizon.net. Again, my email is lawcorey1, lawcorey1@verizon.net. You can have a free copy of the book. It's a great book that takes you through a quick review of America's wars over the last couple hundred years, and analyzes both sides and really explores how those wars might have been prevented. And then it has several chapters on how we can have a change of thinking about war to really make violence and the choice of war an absolute last resort in conflict resolution. So that's a great thing. We're going to be focusing on that. Anyone that would like to help our project, we are certainly always looking for more people to join our team. Financial contributions are certainly welcome, but also expertise, substantive expertise about these issues, as well as the fine art of excellent filmmaking. So that's a quick highlight. Rick, over to you.
Yep. I guess it's time to start shutting the show down for another week. And before we close, we'd like to provide a weekly reminder to veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching Into Care. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. That number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks. It's time for us to go. Tonight, I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on VBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. I'd like to thank our producer at VBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.